Give this book to people and they're just in shock because it dares to start off and say we were once innocent. You know, then it talks about resignation and then it's got, you know, the scream, you know, and now we can understand that, you know, because that's the horror of the resigned world is like that. But you see these two people that are walking along the promenade, they're just walking like it's a normal day. But for this guy, he's screaming. The whole atmosphere is vibrating with terror because this is the real situation. This was a mad world. And this person can see it, and that's the effect it has to an innocent. When you're like these two people here, this is like it's always been. So what, you know? So this is all about resignation and it's just breaking the rules all day long, every sentence, this book. We've never discussed, we haven't even admitted about resignation, let alone that there are unresigned people or anything, which is hugely shocking. I found this understanding before I was 30 or 33 or 5 or whatever it was. So I had a bridging understanding. But in Tasmania, I carried around a bit of paper. I had the first bit said it's called What I Reckon. Because it was a pretty childish kind of explanation, but I had to have some bridging understanding to keep me going. But the very, very, very important thing I've worked out in my mind anyway, Franklin's 10 years older than Stefan. And Stefan, this is an amazing story. Stefan actually was so desperate to try to understand this resigned world, this mad world of adults kind of thing, that he actually decided there must be infiltrated by aliens onto this planet. They're all aliens. He couldn't understand. They're so different, right? Anyway, this is very funny. When he got hold of freedom, the first thing he looked up in the index was aliens. And there's alienation. There's so many in every sense. And he thought, shit, my worst fears are confirmed. It's a very funny story. But that's how desperate it is to be unresigned. And because you can't make any sense because they're living in silence. My greatest comment I made all through those early years was that people, adults, take it for granted that the way they live is self-evident because they're so silent, they don't admit it. They don't even know where they are. So they, that they think it's self-evident why they behave the way they are. But to an innocent, it's total mystery. It's absolute sheer pain. If you haven't got a bridging understanding, what happens at resignation is you decide, shit, I can't try to make sense of this world and in myself, so I have to resign, right? And then you're part of everybody, you're part of the problem, you're part of the world as it is. But if you stay unresigned, it's a torturous life, absolutely torturous. I mean, how horrific was it that Stefan had to say, actually believe there must be aliens on this planet because I can't understand. They're weird as all get out. And so if Stefan didn't find that and he's up to believing there's aliens and he's now 31, Frank was 41 or whatever, and you add another 10 years to Stefan's equation, he's going to be absolutely desperate. You know, really shut down. Because the only way they cope, if you listen to these two guys, and I've been listening to them for a fortnight, is by adopting, masquerading, faking it to make it, pretending to be part of it. Like in his presentation, Stefan says, I could pretend to be one of the boys and laughing and, you know, I could masquerade it. But underneath, it was getting more and more desperate trying to make sense of this mad world. And so they faked it to make it. So they develop all these sort of adaptions to try to look like they're participating in the getting on with the upset world, but they're not really. They're only get to do it to so that they can coexist. And the longer you do that, the more habituated it is. And in my estimation, I think Franklin, because he's got such a wonderful mind, he's become somewhat intellectual, you know, build a facade of, because he's so good with words and so good on paper, he can sort of scam it and get on with that world. But so that intellectualism now has become sort of part of his persona. So he's got a lot of layers. He talks about the onion to get back to this innocent child within him in his original innocent happy state. So he's sort of, I use the word crushed. So when Franklin was young, instead of going to university, he just went bush for a couple of years, and he went up to a farm, didn't want to go and see the European countries like all these other African friends. He wanted to stay close to nature and disown all that rubbish, so because he was an unresigned prophet. We don't know all of Stefan's story, but he was exceptionally innocent boy too. When he was 12, he looked at his father, who was overweight, and all these grotesque older men, and said, "I'm just not want to be part of that world." And at 16, he fell in love with a girl who was in a band at a folk festival or something. But when he talked to her the next day, she said, "Oh yeah, I had an affair last night and slept with this bloke," and that just was a spear through his heart. And because when you're very innocent, and so the whole of Stefan's journey is that he's struggled to cope with this mad world of upset, right? That Franklin's crushed. He had to live in this terrible adult world of resigned world for so long that he's developed all these defences to cope. And so his real self is a little, you know, so I said, we're going to tie you to a tree and put your head back, Franklin, and get a huge crane in with a big hook and lower it right down into the bottom of you and then pull out your soul bit by bit to get to come back on the surface. So there's all this, another 10 years on top of Franklin, Stefan. So Stefan can still, you can still hear it in his voice and his excitement about life, you know, and they both were troubled by why isn't everyone else happy and excited the same as I ever had, you know? And, you know, like when I went to that party when I came out of Tasmania and I stood on a chair, there's just a sea of people from here up to the house at the top, huge auditorium. And I was talked so loud, everyone shut up. And I told them that all frauds and fakes and artificial, and I was really angry. And everyone went totally silent. And then the blokes turned their backs on me, and this woman, Jill Rand, that went later married the Premier, she just said, "Jeremy, sit down, the world's more complicated than you understand and you'll get used to it." I don't know. But that's how naive and how desperate I was for bridging understanding. So it's a whole new world of description to explain what it's like to be a ship at sea, someone unresigned. It's a horror story. Now, and that's been their story. And yeah, the killer punch on that one is we got a 67-year-old write to us, you know, who'd been a ship at sea to that length. So that's adding 41. How's that from 67? I don't know, another 27 years of living without a bridging understanding, not understanding the mad world. How terrible would that? And that's written in here. This is the story of what happens to somebody who hasn't had a bridging understanding as a ship at sea. Having watched the video presentations on your website and have read to partway through chapter 2 of Freedom, when I read the line, "to be confused and frightened to the point of being sickened by human behaviour, indeed to be suicidally depressed by it, is the effect the human condition has if you haven't resigned yourself to living a relieving but utterly dishonest and superficial life of denial of it. This has shaken me to the core, as it describes my tormented life for 67 years, and it tells me why it has been so, which nothing or no one has been able to do." And I think Franklin's got a similar line in his speech, you know, about no one ever explained that part of myself. "Having discovered this immense truth, I hope I can find the rest of this book a way to cope with the avalanche of emotions it has unleashed in me. At the moment, I feel overwhelmed and vulnerable, which I presume is not unknown to yourselves when this realization occurs in people like me. And I would dearly love to receive some guidance on this. I honestly believe that if anything can save the world, this book has the potential to, if the world can cope with it. Thank you." So that's how incredibly traumatized his whole life has been. So I found a bridging understanding. I had a little bullshit explanation for a long time. Then I found the real one. And so I didn't have to die a million deaths like these two guys had. So they're coming back from the dead, as it were, layer after layer. Like I said to them the other day, twice, I said, "I don't think there's anybody on earth this moment who's recovering from an understanding or some sort of psychological breakthrough in their understanding of themselves, and making as much and as fast progress as you, these two blokes. It's such a torturous position to not understand the world of reality, the upset world, the resigned world. And to finally find that understanding, well, you can read it between the lines in Franklin's book, it's just so enormously relieving. You can just feel that the relief pouring out of their pores for finally getting this relief. So that's a bit about their background. Is that pretty right? So this is a whole new discussion and description of our world. If we can find more ships at sea, we would. You can bet on that. The problem is they're very rare. And we haven't encountered that many over the years. And we've had the information out there for a long time. They're really rare. Well, you guys must know that from your personal experience, how rare your life's been. How unusual. Like I was saying about Stefan, you know, he's preparing us to commandeer a gathering of people on some other pretext and then just tell them about his concern that what's wrong with these fucking humans, why are they tethered and why are they basically living in a cave and won't get out of it? Because there's a whole lot of stuff out here that's real and true and they won't go near it. And they're all tethered and strangled and artificial and false, and they're living in this false world. And like this elephant, they don't know that they can break free. You know, from where he's sitting, it's ridiculous behaviour. But they're very rare ships at sea. We can find them.
They're also often very traumatised and
crippled by their situation.
Yeah, so they're not very
You mean ships at sea are traumatised?
Yeah, so it's hard for them to be functional. They're sort of...
Yeah, well, so, that's very true. That's the point I was just making. I was saying the thing about if you walk a mile in Stefan's shoes is a clue in that elephant one, because you're a very, very extrovert, very determined person, very motivated kind of dude, you know. So you've said, listen, there's something going wrong here. You're all dead and artificial and false and for some reason you're living in this state of stupidity, you know. And fuck it, I'm not going to accept it. I mean, that's the most amazing thing about that video, little video of yours before you came across that. You say, look, I don't give a fuck what's wrong with you in your head. Something's terrible. I'm going to tell you what's important. There's this bloody elephant that's strangled. And ever since I was a kid, I want to know why. You know, what's going on? You know, why is this happening? Why is this human's so tied down, you know, when they could be free of that, you know. It was such a courageous and defiant stand. One of the other things I did when I was a young man, similar to that, was I was invited, I came out of the Tasmanian wilderness one stage and I was going out with this girl. Anyway, she invited me to this ball in Sydney, which had all the young Turks in Sydney there. And it was a huge auditorium. And all the, you know, the young up-and-comings and everything were there, right? I was so distressed by it, I stood on my chair, this is Fettinger, and I started telling them how they were all fucking frauds, dishonest and freaks and artificial and fake. You know, I just went for it. And the whole room, and I mean, the room went from here to that fence over there. It was huge, full of people. And they all went silent. And that's how defiant I was and how frustrated I was, totally bewildered by what the fuck was going on this fucking planet. And they're all smiling and laughing and having big feasts and doing this. And it was mad, of a most extreme form, you know. Anyway, the girl I was with just stood up and sat me on his shoulder and said, Jeremy, just sit down, you know. The world's a bit more complicated than you realise, and then all the blokes sort of turned their backs and just ignored me. But that's how frustrated I was and how defiant I was. And that's what your elephant thing is. It's you saying, I'm not going to... So in terms of what we've said, which was that how difficult it is to be a ship at sea, how lonely and distressing. Look at Olaf, you know, because he's got a real fluke situation. When he was 12, 13, he was going, entering the process of resignation, but he realised that everyone that was resigned, no, he didn't know about resignation, of course, were friendly and extrovert, and he didn't know they were on this giant escape mission and pretending and just wanting to escape this dark corner, and so they're massively sort of stewed up and excited about it, and it's all artificial. So, and he didn't want to be a loner, so he artificially pretended to be one of them. So he didn't resign, and he faked being a resigned person, and he became accepted by them all, right? So he pulled off this stunt, and he pulled it off till he was 21 years old. What happened at 21 is he went to a university somewhere north up in Sweden, up in the bloody Caribou country where it's snow and shit. But anyway, he's up there, and he was with this other bloke, right? Now, this other bloke was a pseudo-idealist in a big time. Like, he went down to Oslo and held placards up about, you know, the G8 summit and all that stuff, saying greed is bad and evil and all, you know. But see, Olaf is such a clean skin that he knew that this guy was just faking it. He was an artificially idealistic. He knows he's full of shit and he's just pulling off his stunt. And it really absolutely distressed him. So what, in effect, he was forced back into engaging with the issue of the human condition, which he'd put aside, right? So now he's 21, 22, and he's now back in, going through resignation, trying to face down, this guy's a fraud, I know he's a fucking fraud, you know, and I'm going to put up with all this fraudulent, you know, the world, you know, pseudo-idealism about, you know, the G8, capitalists killing the world and all that shit, you know? And he was just so distressed about it. But he was then back in the human condition. So he sort of picked up where he was at 12 and started wrestling with the human condition. Well, that became more and more depressing. So he typed in, you know, what is the human condition? He was near death. His family were really, really worried that he was going to suicide because he wasn't giving in. Because people don't want to give in and resign because you become a total fraud. Yeah, actually, if you resign, from there on, your life's meaningless. Everything you say and think is coming off a false base. You're artificial to all get out. You're basically, you know. So kids don't resign easily. But if they fight too long, they, you know, they will suicide because they can't reconcile the ideal with the real. And so he got deeper and deeper into depression. And he got to a point where he couldn't go to university anymore. And his parents were really terrified that he was going to suicide. Then he typed in those words, found his stuff, and he's coming back to life bit by bit from a state of extreme terror. He's still afraid of the issue of the human condition, but he's getting every email because I tune in a bit to what Tone and Moni and Weeby are doing, and I can see, you know, psychologically he's coming back to life. He's thawing out, but how much terror has been in his system? You know, because unlike, see, you're an extrovert and you forced yourself on the world and you weren't going to go under. You know, you were going to make this crazy world, this issue, you weren't going to give up on it, you know what I mean? Whereas Olaf, different personality, not as extrovert, I suppose, and just came up with this trick to avoid resignation and it backfired when he was 21 and then he got seriously depressed and then he found this and saved his life. But if you walk a mile in Franklin's shoes, Franklin, if you read his early emails, you know, he said, oh shit, this is just so long. He said, I tried all this, I've been an anomaly, I've been a weird person, I did all this and that. Anyway, so then I started all these idealistic things. I started a barter system. I mean, that's really incredible, to try to replace the existing exchange system, which is full of sharks and short. Because barter, I guess, is more sincere, you know, it's real exchange. And And then started radio talks, shows, talking to people about it, and then learning all these different techniques about how to heal your fucking self and all that stuff. Absolutely, totally sincere about the way he's trying to tackle the problem of the wrongness of the world. Courageous stuff. Difficult. Get on radio. Get out there. Talk to them. Try to study all these different techniques about, you know, I don't know what the names of them, but then he came across this. He said, I'd already given up, because you can watch, if you read his Facebook page, you know, he's, people are saying, oh, good to sort of hear from you again. So there's been a hiatus there. Well, Franklin basically went offline, basically because he'd given up. Well, it's in his emails. I couldn't. I was basically giving up. I couldn't. That was futile. Religion's futile. All these New Age courses were futile. I don't know. Franklin's beautifully articulate, but he's described all that, you know. Basically, he'd come up empty and was just about ready to quit. Not going to, still weren't going to go along with the bullshit world, but, you know, but had no other path left to him. So what Wiebe just said about the problem with ships at sea is it's a torturous life that many of them end up in, which is the thing I was trying to, before you got here last night, I was trying to immerse Franklin in. When you think back about how many unresigned ships at sea there've been and how torturous a life they had, because the further you go back, the greater the number of society were ships at sea. And, you know, Noah's Ark, you know, that's 10,000 years ago maybe. He's talking about when the emergence of agriculture and people living on top of each other. Suddenly there's the increase, graph of the increase in number of resigned people. Because for a long time you weren't resigned at all. There was a very rare person in your society was resigned. And the equation would have been the other, where if you were resigned, you'd have a torturous life because you're totally out of step with all these other people. Because they're going to be talking truth all day long and fearless about all sorts of truth, you know. I mean, you're terrified of it and they won't stop talking about it. It'll be a horrific life for a resigned person when most of your society is unresigned. So we haven't even discussed the human journey at all, honestly. But when we do, we go back and we start immersing ourselves. Well, what was it like 11,000 years ago prior to agriculture? Then at 9,000 years ago, when there's starting to be more and more, you know, and all this sort of stuff. Like if you read Freedom, there's a great picture, a drawing in there, an etching of Noah's Ark, you know, and it's got the Ark sort of grounded on top of a bloody hill somewhere, and that all these bodies are all strewn around all over the place because they've all resigned and died, and here's the last sort of, well, in Bantopost, or the Bantu terminology, left after the reaping that still hasn't resigned. So Wiebe's right, you know, even if there are unresigned people out there, and we're looking for them. You know, they're all stranded in all manner of horrific, you know, tortured places. They're not that functional from that point of view. The quote in here from that ship at sea, that old bloke, he was 69 or something. Have watched the video presentation on your website and have read partway through chapter 2 of Freedom. When I read the line, to be confronted and confused and confronted to the point of being sickened by human behaviour, indeed to be suicidally depressed by it, is the effect the human condition has if you haven't resigned yourself to living relieving but utterly dishonest and superficial life in denial of it. This has shaken me to the core as it describes my tortured life for 67 years. And it tells me why it has been so, which nothing or no one has ever done before. Having discovered this immense truth, I hope I can find the rest of this book a way to cope with the avalanche of emotions it has released in me. So this got to Franklin when he was 41, saved his life. If he had battered on, he's already run out of rope, you know, hit the end of his chain, we can't get any sort, you know, he said, you know, this is all failing him, pseudo-idealism, New Age movements failed him, religions failed him, he had nowhere to go. But if this guy is 67, which 41 from 67 is $3, $2.50. So it's whatever it is. More years down the track. Yeah, you haven't seen yet, Franklin, but I've been doing wrestling, teaching. Stepping some wrestling.
Okay.
Wrestling tricks. Yeah. Mind you, he was so shy when I started wrestling him. But I exploited. That's what you've got to do as a wrestler. Uh-huh. You've got to exploit that moment of doubt, hesitation. Uh-huh. Anyway.
I wish I'd seen it.
I was afraid to come up there because I was afraid he was hiding behind some door.
Like in the Pink Panther, the guy that jumps out of the cupboard and jumps on Peter Sellers from all different...
It's going to be some dangerous 2 weeks, I guess.
Sorry, we should stay on track. We're trying to talk about how to crack the problem of getting this stuff started. But yeah, okay, ships at sea be great, but they're all in torture and there's very few of them. Yeah, like I said, I can't remember when I was talking about it. It's in one of our emails. There's a spectrum of ships at sea, from those that should have, that really hurt soul, to exceptionally innocent. So if you get from that end of the spectrum, like his, it's just so much pain, he should have resigned. And those that don't can pay a very high price, because it will send them mad trying to face down the human condition without a reconciling understanding. So this is the first time in the history of the earth that we've had a bridging understanding. It's an amazing moment in human history, because people say, oh, well, they could use the we're competitive because of selfish instincts and all that crap. But the thing is, when you're unresigned, you know that's bullshit excuse. They know we've got a soul. That's the whole issue about when you're a kid. That you know that their soul tells us that we should all be cooperative. It's fundamental. It's in our makeup. So what the hell is everybody doing the opposite? Being brutal and selfish and mean and careless and couldn't care less and dishonest and silent, you know? So the old fucking animals are selfish, because animals are competitive and aggressive, trying to reproduce the genes, and that's why we are. It's just bullshit to a kid. They know this. If their soul is not competitive and aggressive, it's their soul that's telling them that the world should be different. It's fucking well not, you know. So, they just die. Well, that Catcher in the Rye is an absolute ripper. So beautifully written. And, you know, and he's just wandering around Holden Caulfield, cannot cope and wants to live in a little cabin by a stream and just cut wood and not integrate with the world. You know, like Franklin went off and lived in the scrub. And you said I had the inclination but didn't quite do it. And so he's struggling and... And then this man says to him, you know, you're not the first to encounter this, and, you know, and empathises with him, and that sort of saves his life. And then he says, you know, that he only has one vision, and that's to be a catcher in the rye, to stop all these kids jumping off this cliff, to save them from resigning a horrible death. I mean, it's you got to put yourself in my shoes. Walk a mile in my shoes. Imagine how much I know that how precious this is. All these kids are dying, you know. Surely there's people out there that can hear this and come and grab it and help, you know what I mean? Imagine all these years and you give them the answer to the most precious answer that'll stop all these kids jumping off the cliff, if you want to use that analogy. And they couldn't give a flying fuck about it. Well, basically they can't hear it is the problem. I mean, you know, you guys are discovering very excitedly this reconciling understanding that actually saves your life. You know, so you've been freed from this pain. And I'm very excited about that. But the trouble is, and by inference, everyone needs this desperately, you know. Once they're resigned, they don't want to go near it. And much, look, this time it's safe. You can look at the subject, honest to God, you can look at it this time and it'll be all right. You won't get cooked. This will tell you, it says it almost within about 10 words, you know. This will be a positive story, or Tony's first video. You know, this is going to have a positive ending. It's not going to dump you in a depression. It's going to liberate you. And, you know, supposedly you're supposed to buy them a little bit of trust. Okay, I'll listen to a little bit. Fuck me, you know. But that's, thank God for Plato. I mean, Plato told us that this would happen. They wouldn't hear a single, he said a single. I mean, fuck, he wasn't, you know, pretending. He could have said, well, make it a bit hard. He said, no, he said, not a single one will hear it. A single one. Shit. I mean, he knew from his personal experience. Like, if you walk a mile in Plato's shoes, you can see what he did. He was hitting the death effect big fucking time, you know. That's why it's all written, it's a dialogue with Socrates. Because Socrates gained a lot of acceptance. Because Socrates actually wasn't very confronting. He was just an honest old bastard, you know. He'd go around and tell them that, you know, to question everything they said and do all this. It sort of seemed meaningful, like the sort of phrases Franklin throws around, you know, lots of quote, but when they're hard to sort of, if you haven't got this understanding, you know, you try to make a profound statement about the world, and Socrates is very, you know, you've got to question everything, and if that's all, that's really, very, very profound. But Socrates wasn't really cutting through it, you know, but he got a lot of reputation just for his sheer courage, and because at the end he said, fuck it, I'll drink your poison, you can get stuffed, you know, it's so courageous. So he martyred himself. And so he was accepted because he wasn't really that threatening. But having become accepted, so this one of his group was this kid, Plato. And Plato was a clean skin. Plato was an honest thinker. But he encountered the death effect enormously to the point where he realised, you can work it all out, he realised that he'll have to make this a dialogue with Socrates. Has got the credibility and the acceptance, so I'll make this is a dialogue with Socrates, so everyone will be interested. Bloody great con job, you know, to get people to read this stuff. So he bled himself right out of it, and bled Socrates right into it, because Socrates has become the folk hero, and I'll get this accepted. And God knows how he let all this stuff slide through, because he's so honest in. Plato is just such a clean thinker. Unfucking believable stuff. But anyway, thank God they did all let it slip through. And because we get it, the help of that, because Plato is talking to us, right in this room, this little group, no more. From, where did he live? 360 BC, so that's 2,360 years ago, whatever the fuck. You know, he said, listen, you poor fuckers, you know, you're going to try to get this out there. They won't hear not one single thing you try to tell them. I'll warn you. So I'm reading fucking Plato. Well, mate, how do you solve the problem? You described it well enough. Well, he gives us a bit of a clue. He says, at first, because I need to come accustomed to the light. Oh, yeah. Well, how long before they come accustomed? Do you not know anything about analytics or fucking the internet? Mr. Plato. Well, I can't find any clues in there beyond what I've told you as to how we solve it. Anyway. So, sorry. So that's the story behind Ships at Sea. They're fucking rare and they're all traumatised. They're all dying, million deaths.